winter storm hit southeast U.S., leaving 100,000 people without power and 3,000 flights canceled. North Korea is set to have launched two unidentified projectiles, possibly ballistic missiles, toward its east coast. And the U.S. National Security Advisor warns Russia of severe economic consequences if it invades Ukraine. A winter storm combining high winds and snowfall sweeps through parts of the U.S. southeast, disrupting normal life there. The storm leaves nearly 100,000 people without power due to falling trees and fences. Many roads and streets are now coated with a treacherous frigid glaze. More than 2.5 centimeters of snow fell per hour in some parts of the state status of North and South Carolina, as well as Georgia, Tennessee, and Virginia. Thousands of flights were also canceled on Sunday. Conditions are expected to deteriorate further, especially in North Carolina. Parks and libraries were closed in the state on Sunday in some areas. Weather stations recorded wind gusts traveling at more than 80 kilometers per hour. Former U.S. President Donald Trump has once again unleashed a litany of claims of voter fraud in the 2020 presidential election.
Why aren't they investigating November 3rd, a rigged and stolen election, without getting to the bottom of which we will never have a fair and free democracy? Why aren't they looking at that?
Trump made the remarks during a rally in Florence County in the state of Arizona. He called the storming of the Capitol by his supporters on January 6, 2021, quote, a protest against a crooked election. He also took the opportunity to hit his successor, Joe Biden, saying his administration is incompetent. Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol in the hope of preventing lawmakers from certifying Biden's victory, but to no avail. Angry protesters then clashed with police and tried to beat up a number of Democratic lawmakers. They also damaged parts of the building housing both wings of Congress. South Korea and Japan report another suspected ballistic missile launch by the North. The two projectiles, which they claim were fired toward the East Coast, would be the fourth this month if confirmed. A revelation about Pyongyang's new launch comes from Japan's government and the South Korean military. The North had already carried out two tests of what it called hypersonic missiles. Following that, the U.S. imposed sanctions on five people linked to North Korea's ballistic weapons program. The sanctions were the first the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden has imposed on the country. The North, however, called Washington's measure provocation, adding that the U.S. was intentionally escalating the situation. Pyongyang says its recent missile tests are an exercise of its right to self-defense in the face of potential regional threats. Let's find out what our man has been able to find out from that part of the world. Frank Smith joins us out of the South Korean capital of Seoul. Frank, it's good to see you. Tell us if you found anything further than I said, and basically tell us a little bit more about the intentions of these ongoing seemingly missile tests.
Well, one thing that's interesting that you didn't mention in your report is that these two missiles launches came directly out of the North Korean capital of Pyongyang, which is a little bit unusual. These follow, as you mentioned, the other missile tests that North Korea has conducted recently this year. It's part of its ongoing development of strategic nuclear deterrence, the capability to launch nuclear weapons from different platforms. These include submarine-launched ballistic missiles, which North Korea tested late last year, hypersonic ballistic missiles that travel at, you know, upwards of Mach 10 and can therefore be more difficult to detect and intercept, as well as cruise missiles, again, also very difficult to intercept. North Korea also wants some attention to its desire for relief from the biting U.S.-led United Nations Security Council sanctions. And it views, again, the criticism of its missile launches as something of a double standard.
Do you think there is, or do you think it's just the maneuvers? Do you think it's more directed at getting the attention of the U.S. or perhaps, you know, showing your teeth and flexing muscle, and you know, the prospect of a real confrontation?
Well, I'm not sure it's about the prospect of a real confrontation on the Korean Peninsula. A nuclear war here is really would take place in a very small area, and it would result in, you know, catastrophic consequences for North Korea itself. Hmm. It is, however, seen as something of a message. One of the things that North Korea communicated about its previous missile launch was that it was given the order on Friday to conduct that missile launch, and that was following the criticism of its previous missile launch from the U.S. and the imposition of the sanctions, indicating that these subsequent launches were in response to U.S. Measures against North Korea.
Many, many thanks. That's Frank Smith, our man in Seoul, South Korea. Thank you very much. The United States once again accuses Russia of trying to invade Ukraine, warning Moscow of even tougher sanctions.
What we have laid out is a very clear message to the Russians, and we've done so in concert and unison with our allies, that if they do further invade Ukraine, there will be severe economic consequences and a price to pay.
Jake Sullivan says the U.S. and its allies will give an appropriate response if Moscow is confirmed to have been behind recent cyber attacks on Ukraine. On the other side, Russian officials are demanding written responses to security proposals they've offered to the U.S. and NATO. Moscow wants guarantees that NATO's eastward expansion will be stopped and that troops and military hardware will be removed from areas close to its borders. Russia also rejects the West's claims about its intentions to attack Ukraine, saying its troop movement along the borders is to ensure its security in the face of NATO's advances. Journalists in Indian-controlled Kashmir denounce what they call a forcible and illegal takeover of the largest independent media body there. Outgoing members of the Kashmir Press Club say the incident happened in Srinagar on Saturday. They say a group of journalists pushed into the KPC office and forcibly took control of the club, announcing themselves interim office bearers. The KPC members say those journalists were backed by police and paramilitary personnel. People from other media outlets have also condemned the incident, calling it unprecedented. Officials, however, have not yet reacted. Journalists in Indian-controlled Kashmir have often complained about curbs on free speech there. Iran and China have announced the implementation of a 25-year cooperation agreement aimed at strengthening bilateral economic and political ties. This sweeping agreement is a sign of Iran's pivot on the east in defiance of the U.S., which has apparently showed its discontent by slapping sanctions on Iran.
Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi hosted his Iranian counterpart Hossein Amir Abdullahian in the city of Buji in Jiangsu province on Friday. The Chinese and Iranian foreign ministers announced the launch of a 25-year cooperation agreement aimed at strengthening economic and political ties. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian says the strategic cooperation agreement between Tehran and Beijing is built on a win-win approach in line with the interests of both countries. The Iranian diplomat outlined the latest state of bilateral cooperation in various fields and said Tehran is resolved to implement all infrastructure agreements with Beijing. Iran and China signed the landmark Sino-Iranian Comprehensive Strategic Partnership Agreement in March last year in defiance of the U.S. unilateral sanctions to strengthen the long-standing economic and political alliance. It paves the way for Iran's participation in the Belt and Road Initiative, a massive infrastructure project stretching from East Asia to Europe. Meanwhile, Beijing once again voiced its firm opposition to unilateral sanctions imposed by the United States against Iran. The Chinese foreign minister said the U.S. bears primary responsibility for the ongoing difficulties with Iran, having unilaterally withdrawn from a 2015 nuclear deal. The United States reimposed the sanctions that the agreement had removed and slapped new bans under different labels. Wang said China firmly opposes unilateral sanctions against Iran, political manipulation through topics including human rights, and interference in the internal affairs of Iran and other regional countries. He also noted that Beijing completely supports Iran's wise stand toward the bullying policies of the United States, and also its position on the ongoing talks with the five remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear agreement, urging Washington to make up for the past mistake in withdrawing from the deal.
That this 25-year agreement with China represents new possibilities for Iran to really, if not break out of the sanctions, at least they have a lifeline for the things that they will need thanks to this long-term agreement with China. And for China, of course, it's a major undertaking because it is long-term. They do expect it to last over two decades. So this is something that is a permanent feature of the political architecture. And I think it represents a tremendous opening for Iran to retake its own rightful place in the array of nations of the world, in the Middle East and globally.
Iran's growing ties with China are part of the Islamic Republic's look to the East policy. That also involves bringing together other U.S. adversaries like Russia, which Iran also has a long-term deal with. Hostile U.S. policies, including sanctions, have been a major reason for countries like Russia, China, and Iran to get closer. And to soften the blow of the sanctions, these countries are all moving towards de-dollarization.
Since Washington's 2018 withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal, followed by subsequent sanctions aimed at crushing the Iranian economy, leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has underlined the necessity of pressing ahead with efforts to neutralize the sanctions. Under that strategy, Iran has tried to adopt an East-oriented economic policy, expanding its ties with neighboring and other Asian countries and striving to become self-sufficient in key domains. China is Iran's number one trade partner. This partnership heavily relies on Iran's oil supply to energy-hungry China. Reports show that in 2021, and despite U.S. oil embargoes on Iran, China tripled its oil imports from the country. Now the implementation of the new pact will guarantee the flow of Iran's oil to China and cement the two sides' trade ties. Also, a review of trade between Iran and Russia shows Tehran's exports to Moscow increased by 58%, including 62% in agricultural and food products in the first 9 months of the current Persian year, which ends on March 20th. Tehran says a long-term cooperation roadmap between Iran and Russia is at its final stage of development as the Islamic Republic takes the initiative to expand its ties with neighboring, regional, and friendly countries to neutralize sanctions.
China and Russia are fighting back. They're going to be playing a major role. They're going to maintain their relations with the countries that they have a good relationship with, and Iran is one of these. And they're not going to be bullied by the independent or unilateral sanctions or even any other sanctions that would be placed on a country like Iran.
Tehran has also pursued the removal of sanctions through diplomatic channels, including the negotiations in Austria's capital, Vienna.
The eighth round of talks between Iran and the remaining signatories to the JCPOA goes on in Vienna to revive the deal.
Tehran says all anti-Iran sanctions should be removed in a verifiable manner. Tehran also says the U.S. should give guarantees that it won't leave the deal again.
As Afghan students are going through difficult educational conditions, an Iranian private streaming company, Philemo School, has made its online education platform available for free for all students in Afghanistan. Rahmatullah Baghban is in Kabul.
For Afghan students, the year 2021 was full of obstacles. The educational system was disrupted and many schools across remained closed, while a ban on girls returning to secondary schools is still in place.
Now the Philemo School has opened for students in Afghanistan
to facilitate learning. This Yanonan platform provides Afghan students with free educational courses. Samira and Fatima are students of secondary school. After being banned from attending their classes, they decided to join online courses.
Hello everyone, how are you?
Now they are students of Filimoy School and they are happy with everything it has provided.
It has been almost 152 days that we have been away from school. We felt very desperate. In order to stay involved with education, my friends and I gather here and benefit from Filimo School's online courses. The lessons and videos provided by Filimo are very interesting and creative.
Teachers and educational consultants believe that online courses are a good means of learning, especially at a time of crisis and pandemic. Mahdi Ishaqi, who is an education consultant, has found Filimo Online School very professional and useful for Afghan students.
I found the Filimo School extraordinarily useful, especially for Afghan students who are affected by a political crisis and the coronavirus pandemic. This is very valuable academically too. I'm sure our students highly welcome Filimo School because they are in need of such opportunities.
Filimo School says it has provided the service to Afghan students because of their difficult educational conditions. So now every Afghan boy and girl from preschool to the ninth grade can access the same lessons as Iranians do. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
And that's it with international news. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
It has been well documented that the Zionist regime often attacks Palestinian fishers directly. A total of 73 incidents in which the regime opened fire on Gaza fishers were recorded by human rights monitors between October and December. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Ahmad Al-Samak, journalist. This article is published under the heading Danger Rises for Gaza's Fishers. Stay tuned for more. Beirut Al-Ghara was 2 miles out at sea on December 24th when his fishing boat started to sink. He immediately headed back toward the shore, but a few hundred meters away from it, the vessel became completely submerged in water. Along with two of his workers, Beirut swam to safety. Yet three of his brothers had to be rescued and were brought to hospital. Luckily, it was around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Beirut said, and some other fishers saw us and rushed to help us. The accident had a serious effect on his brother Naif. If I had been stuck at sea any longer, I would have died, Naif said, adding, I have vomited every day since then, and I have a fear of the sea. I will never sail again. I would prefer to stay jobless than to go out on Beirut's boat once more. A number of Beirut's boats had been damaged by the Zionist regime when it mounted a major attack on Gaza in May last year. The Zionist regime targeted Deir al-Balah port in central Gaza, where Beirut's vessels were moored during its attack. One of the boats proved irreparable. The Gaza authorities estimated that Beirut's losses from the May offensive came to around $25,000, he said, but it's more like $30,000. The boat, which sank on December 24th, was named Amal, the Arabic word for hope. It was among those damaged by the Zionist regime's shrapnel in May. To fix the boat properly, Beirut needed approximately 3 kilograms of fiberglass. He could not afford fiberglass, so he used a sealant, which was cheaper. He had been able to keep working as a fisher using Amal since the May attack. Yet, when the boat started to fall apart on December 24th, it was clear that the repair job had not been adequate. Beirut recalled how he was nicknamed the King of Fishers as, "I used to have 4 boats." Before the May attack, he would earn up to $1,300 per month. Now, he makes only around $300, he said, and no one has paid any compensation for my loss. It has been well documented that the Zionist regime often attacks Palestinian fishers directly. A total of 73 incidents in which the Zionist regime opened fire on Gaza fishers were recorded by human rights monitors between October and December. The Zionist regime's naval forces even fired on Gaza fishers twice on New Year's Day. Hazar al-Saidi has been repeatedly fired on by the Zionist regime. Following one such episode of state violence in 2017, Hazar was arrested and detained for almost a year. He was accused of crossing the permitted fishing boundary off Gaza's coastline, a boundary that is often arbitrary. In February 2019, Hazar was out fishing with his cousin, Mohammad, when they were attacked by the Zionist regime's navy. The two men tried to escape, but could not. The Zionist regime's navy fired an estimated 30 rubber-coated steel bullets at Hazar, while his cousin managed to hunker down. After being struck in both eyes, Hazar fell over and lost consciousness. "I woke up 4 days later in an Israeli hospital in Ashdod," he said, adding, "I heard someone speaking Hebrew and asked him, 'Where am I?' But he didn't answer." A doctor who spoke Arabic then explained to Hazar that he had lost sight in his right eye. His left eye could take about a week to recover, the doctor predicted. Despite being in severe pain, Hazar was shackled by hand and feet as troops brought him to the Erez military checkpoint, which separates Gaza and the occupied territories. He was escorted through the checkpoint and abandoned by the Zionist regime troops. A man came to assist him and brought him to the local police, who called an ambulance. When Hazar was examined by doctors in Gaza, they confirmed that he was now blind in both eyes. "Today, Hazar seldom leaves his home," he said. "I don't have any desire to meet anyone." Opening fire. fire is not the only way that the Zionist regime undermines the safety of Gaza's fishers. The relentless siege on Gaza has caused living standards to decline generally, and particularly among fishers. Many fishers cannot foot the bill for maintenance work on their vessels. The Zionist regime's import restrictions have also led to a shortage of spare parts. The shortage means that when spare parts are available to buy, they are more expensive than they were previously. According to one man who carries out repair work on Gaza's boats, the price of a new engine for a medium-sized vessel is now more than $11,000, almost twice what it was a decade ago. The consequence of working in boats that are not seaworthy can prove fatal, as the story of Muhammad Musleh illustrates. Muhammad, 40, drowned in September when the boat in which he was fishing capsized. Its engine had ceased to function. His brother, Allah, admitted that the boat was not in good condition, but the family had to keep using it for reasons of economic necessity. Allah said, "If we had had money to buy another engine, we wouldn't have lost Muhammad. But we couldn't afford a new one, and we still can't. I know it was wrong for us to go out to sea," he said, "but we didn't have another choice. I am a father of four. Faiz, another brother, is a father of three, and Muhammad was also a father of four. Who else will feed our children?"
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and let us present you a supplication to the Lord Most High by the Holy Prophet's Immaculate Daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her. O Allah, by your knowledge of the unseen and your power over creation, keep me alive so long as you know that life is good for me, and cause me to die when death is good for me.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his perfect progeny. Dear brothers and sisters all over the world, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to yet another edition from a series of Canon Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. As you have been following and listening such shows from IRIB English Radio, in this series of shows we are trying to talk about the questions and, let's say, the doubts and misconceptions that we are receiving from different questioners all around the world. For that, we have invited Islamic researcher and scholar Sheikh Nur Muhammad from Qom Seminary Schools to the show to help us to answer the questions. Before asking the first question, I'd like to welcome Sheikh to the show and say salam to him. Salam alaikum, Sheikh, welcome to the show.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Many thanks for accepting the invitation. The question of the day is concerning a historical issue that was asked by a question. I want the respected, I guess the speaker of the show, Sheikh Nur Muhammad, to actually answer this question in the best way possible. Sheikh, it has been asked that, is that true that Imam Ali alayhi salam proposed to the daughter of Abu Jahl? And was that a reason for Lady Fatima salamullah alayha, for Lady Fatima salamullah alayha's anger against Imam Ali? It means that she got angry with Imam Ali alayhi salam to propose to the daughter of Abu Jahl, and this event actually made her a little bit angry, and this was mentioned in history. I want you to exactly tell us what was the story and what and where from this doubt actually is rooted from.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You see that in the history, some people, because of the hatred towards Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, they attribute some lies for the Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. You see that these hatreds and animosity towards Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam cause lots of fake narrations in the hadith corpus, and some of them is actually the particular narration that we are dealing with. In this narration, it has been quoted in Sahih Muslim and Sahih Bukhari that, for example, Imam Ali proposed for the daughter of Abu Jahl, and it was a reason for the wrath of the anger of the Lady Fatima. You see that it is the pure lie, I can say. Actually, there is without any shadow of doubt, and actually, it has, because the if you check the chain of the narration, you see that the one of the narrator of that is Miswar ibn Makhrama. And actually all narration in this regard, maybe we have some narration quoting this fake story, and the main chain person who actually quoted this narration and the made up this story is Miswar ibn Makhrama. If you look at the biography of this individual, he was one of the enemies of Imam Ali. He was lover of Muawiyah, and when the name of Muawiyah was pronounced publicly, he was sending rewards and salutation to Muawiyah.
Yes.
Actually, this was famous for that.
Strange.
And this individual Miswar was one of the follower of Abdullah ibn Zubayr. Mm-hmm. You see. And he has a close relationship with rebels and Khawarij. You see, he has a relationship with all enemies of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. And he was follower of Muawiyah, rebels, and Abdullah ibn Zubayr. You see, in that, if you have this context of the narrator, you see this hatred toward Imam Ali caused a lot of fake narration against him.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to cause trouble for the for the upcoming generations. But it is obvious for everybody, and for the most scholars, they are familiar with the narrator, with the biography of the narrator of the narration. They can easily understand and check it out that this Miswar, in the time of the demise of Noble Prophet, he was only 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And he was a child. How 8 years old child can understand such a thing and the proposal to the, for example, daughter? You see, from all aspect and dimension, we understand this is a fake narration against Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam.
So, Shavana, such issues actually is a need of having a knowledge of Rijal, and the science of actually the knowledge or science of Rijal, which is the science of knowing the true and fake narrations from each other. So for an ordinary person like me, how can I distinguish between these different narrations if I don't have access, for example, to a scholar? How should I know that such narrations are not true?
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that فَاسْأَلُوا أَهْلَ الذِّكْرِ إِن كُنْتُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ. Ask the people of the remembrance, okay, if you do not know. And of course, me and you as ordinary people, when we do not know such ideas, we should refer to the scholars, great scholars, and alhamdulillah, we are benefiting from the knowledge, great knowledge of all Shia scholars, and we benefit from their knowledge. You see that, let me share one narration, if you let me, from Imam Ali alayhi salatu wassalam, and these are actually main narration in this regard, and by these narrations we can understand other aspect of this story. Right. Imam said that فَوَاللَّهُ مَا أَقْبَبْتُهَا وَلَا أَكْرَحْتُهَا عَلَىٰ أَمْرٍ. He said, I swear to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, I did not made Fatima angry and wrathful, and I did not force and impose anything upon her. You see how this honest, pure relationship between Fatima and Imam Ali. وَحَتَّى قَبَضَهَا اللَّهُ عَزَّ وَجَلَّ, until the demise and martyrdom of Lady Fatima. And then he mentioned that وَلَا أَقْضَبَتْنِي وَلَا عَسَدْ لِي أَمْرًا.
So, but we have some narrations and a hadith again in some Sahih books that this great lady of Islam at the time of her death was angry, and she has her wrath with some of the well-known companions, that is some even the caliphs. And it has been mentioned that when they refer to her to apologize from what they did to her, she did not accept them, and she actually refused to meet them at the beginning, but with Imam Ali alayhi salam's mediation, she accepted to meet them, but she didn't even look at them.
Yes.
So we have that even the kind of, because her love and her, let's say, friendship was a criteria for being a Muslim or being in the way, because من أحبها فقد أحب الله ومن أبغضها فقد أبغض الله. So whoever loves her, it means that Allah is, it's as if he is loving Allah. Or whoever is making her angry, it is as if that he makes Allah angry from himself or herself. So we have such a hadith, and we have never heard and seen any hadith that there was sort of, let's say, anger between her and Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Yes, exactly. Talking about the wrath of Lady Fatima against some of the caliphs, it has been mentioned in the hadith corpus. And of course, our discussion is not about that. But we are talking about the relationship, you know, honest and pure relationship of the Lady Fatima and Imam Ali alayhi salatu wassalam. And he said that, وَلَا أَقْضَبَتْنِي وَلَا أَسَدْ لِي أَمْرًا. Never Fatima caused any trouble for me, and he never disobeyed me. وَلَقَدْ كُنْتُ أَنْدُرُ إِلَيْهَا فَتَنْكَشِفُ أَنِّ الْهُمُومَ وَالْأَحْزَانِ. I was looking at her, and she was, you know, causing all troubles and, you know, sorrow to be away from me by looking at her. You see, when you look at such a narration from Imam Ali alayhi salatu wassalam, and when you look at this honest, pure, friendly relationship between them, how such a lies could be attributed to the, you know, Lady Fatima and Imam Ali alayhi salatu wassalam.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
We need to see the root of such, let's say, rumors in the kind of anger and wrath that she had towards some other companions, because it can be a cue for those who are seeking for the truth in the history of the dawn of Islam, that is the beginning of the Islam.
Right. And let me add one point if you have time.
Yes, please.
They ask her about Lady Fatima, about Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, and she said that khayru ba'd, it is the best husband that you can imagine. The best husband possible that you can imagine is Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. You see, by this narrations of Imam Ali himself and Lady Fatima, peace and blessing of Allah be upon them all, how you know, such a lies could be attributed to the Imam Ali alayhi salatu wassalam.
Once again, I want to back to the first question that I asked from you, Sheikhna. What can be the root of, or the roots of such, let's say, issues which are being mentioned sometimes in the history, in parts of history, or in the language of narrations from some books, that they want to actually pretend that there was a sort of, let's say, lack of a good relationship between Lady Fatima salam Allah and Imam Ali alayhi salam, while we know that their relationship was a purified one that actually everyone can confess from all the Islamic denominations, that they had a sort of, let's say, spiritual relationship, that even at the night of their marriage, they started worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for hours and hours. So how can we actually find the roots of these, let's say, rumors in the history, and to trace them to see what is the reality behind these rumors?
Actually, we can guess some you know, reasons and philosophy behind such rumors. One of them, as I said, is a hatred toward Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, and another one is it has maybe some political reason behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, they want to support the, for example, the government of Muawiyah, and of course some of the caliphate system, and they wanted to support such a, you know, system, and because of that they created and make up some, you know, lies against the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. And of course maybe it has another, some other agenda behind that, we are not aware about that. But as I said, we should have a scholarly analyze, a scholarly analysis to such a narration. It does not mean this narration has been mentioned in Sahih Bukhari. Of course, with all respect to the Sunni brothers and sisters, when the narration has been mentioned in one of the Sahih of the Ahl-Sunnah, it does not mean that that narration does not have any problem.
Mm-hmm.
We should have, with all due respect to them, of course, we should have this scholarly analysis to the narrations, of course, as we have this analysis to the Shia narrations. Okay?
Very true.
And we should check out the chain of the narration and the content of the narration, whether we can rely on that or not.
Many thanks, dear Sheikh, for your explanations, and your respected listeners for staying tuned. And we have discussed the reality of the proposal of Imam Ali al-Islam to the daughter of Abu Jahl, and right after that, the anger and wrath of Lady Fatima Zahra from such a proposal. And we discussed that this was not true historically, and there was no reality behind the story. And it was, I mean, the person in the chain of narrators was a fake person, was not a reliable person, and he was known to be a liar. Many thanks again for staying tuned and listening to Qiyan and Islamic Beliefs from IRB English Radio.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, are the Sikh News. With the light.
Each year, a village in Vietnam becomes awash in red and orange as it gears up for the Lunar New Year with spectacular mass production of incense. January is usually the busiest time when villagers are dyeing, drying and whittling bamboo bark to make the fragrance sticks. Also, the scent of each batch is carefully tailored to suit the tastes of the regions where they will be sold. Most households here are involved in this ancient trade, and sales are a major part of their livelihoods. The Lunar New Year will begin on the first day of February. Around this time, sales tick up with throngs of people crowding into temples to light incense during worship. A 3-year-old girl from China's Hebei province has astonished ski enthusiasts with an impressive snowboarding talent.
Hello everybody, I'm Wang Shishi. I'm 3 years old and I can snowboard now.
Shishi's skills have attracted a lot of attention as a toddler boldly tackles the slopes. She makes snowboarding look easy. Despite her tender age, she is already taming the slopes at a higher skill level than a number of other aspiring snowboarders. Her parents say she has been practicing for less than 2 weeks and her progress is startling.
I remember several years ago, I felt quite scared when I was on the advanced slope, but her mother told me that Shishi started to snowboard down right when she got to the advanced trail. She was not afraid at all.
Her parents say she quickly grasped the snowboarding movements and techniques, including some of the trickier swivels and turns. They say Shishi is enjoying the progress she is making on the slopes, and every chance she gets, she asks to go snowboarding. The young snowboarder's mum says the hobby has also brought the family closer together as they enjoy a shared passion together.
Chronic shortage of human organs has always been an issue for patients, especially those suffering from heart diseases. But now a major scientific breakthrough is in the making. U.S. surgeons have successfully implanted a heart from a genetically modified pig into a man. Doctors had said the patient, 57-year-old, was unable to have human transplant because of his health conditions. But now he is recovering from his latest surgery. The surgeons say the man is being carefully monitored to determine how the new organ is performing. But for those who want to know why pigs, here is why. Pigs are considered ideal donors because of their size and rapid growth, among other things.
You know, it is a game changer because, you know, now we will have these organs readily available if this works, and you know, and I hope it will work. We'll have these organs available. We can, you know, we have the technique of genetically modifying. So if there are more tweaking required for modifying the genes, we will be able to do that, and you know, can you know, customize basically the heart for or the organ for the patient.
The transplant is the first of its kind in the world and follows years of research. In the U.S. alone, about 110,000 people are currently waiting for an organ transplant. Also, more than 6,000 patients die each year before getting one. A kingdom of ice and snow. Don't be surprised. It's an international sculpture festival held annually in the Chinese city of Harbin. This year, the venue brims with sports elements in a runner-up to the 2022 Winter Olympics scheduled in Beijing. The annual Winter Festival is the largest of its kind, where sculptors spend weeks using ice and snow to create structures under a given theme. The upcoming Winter Games is the theme this year, as one can visualize giant statues of Bing Duan Duan. The adorable panda mascots are major attractions of the exhibition. The chief designer says an ice tower standing in the center of the park features 24 vertical structures, referring to the 24th Winter Olympics.
In terms of the design concept, the sculpture features 24 vertical structures, referring to the 24th Winter Olympics to be held in Beijing. The spiral array form also indicated the proactive spirit of the Olympics. The free and upward effect is a vivid presentation of the Olympic flame.
The annual festival, which is being held for about 3 decades, usually attracts domestic and foreign tourists. But COVID-19 restrictions have limited the crowds over the past couple of years. Harbin is located in northeast China and receives cold winter wind from Siberia. An average winter temperature there is around minus 17 degrees Celsius.
South Koreans enjoy a wildlife refuge near the Korean Demilitarized Zone. New tours opened in November from the DMZ Crane Peace Town. Frank Smith has more in this report.
A new hiking trail and birdwatching facility opened up in South Korea this past November. DMZ Crane Peace Town created special birding cabins and guides wilderness hikes north of the 38th parallel near the DMZ, the fortified border with North Korea. The Demilitarized Zone was created with the armistice that ended the Korean War back in 1953. Guard post fencing and a 2 to 4 kilometer wide buffer zone now separate North Korea and South Korea, with that no man's land becoming home to rejuvenated plant and wildlife. Local officials see wildlife tourism as an opportunity to promote inter-Korean peace.
Cranes know no borders. That's why we're promoting the crane as a symbol of peace, as they can freely come and go between North and South Korea.
Each winter, several species of birds, especially cranes, spend time to rest and feed in the area, where there's little development and few people. Officials say more birds have been coming here because of depleted feeding grounds in the north.
Sichuan has wide plains suitable for growing rice. Cranes eat the grain that has fallen after harvest, and it's the best place for cranes because it's located north of the civilian control line.
A safe vantage point to photograph the wildlife is provided at the Hantan River near Yangji Village, attracting birders from far afield.
I left home at 4 in the morning to come here to photograph wild birds, swans and cranes. It's good because there are many mallard ducks and other birds. They fight for food with each other, but it's fun.
Cranes are considered a sacred symbol of longevity and fortune here and designated a national monument. Frank Smith, Cheongwon County, South Korea.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Thirty-three lucky green sea turtles get a new lease on life in Indonesia. The turtles were released into the sea off the coast of the island of Bali. Tourists and locals gathered to watch the endangered animals get their way back to the wild. Authorities rescued the reptiles from poachers late last year. The population of green sea turtles has fell sharply in recent years due to excessive hunting and the loss of nesting sites. In Chile, 3 Andean condors are back in the wild after years of rehab at a rescue center. The vulnerable vultures were released near the Chilean capital, Santiago. Scientists will continue to monitor the birds to make sure they are healthy. Andean condors occupy a special place in Chile. They are, in fact, the country's national bird, a and a symbol of power and health. The vultures are one of the biggest flight-capable birds in the world, with a wingspan of up to 3.2 meters. Conservationists in several countries are trying to shore up their population.
In Germany, tasty bits of crumbs are all it takes for hundreds of sheep and goats to participate in the campaign to encourage vaccination against COVID-19. 700 farm animals were arranged into a 100-meter-long syringe in a pasture south of Hamburg. The shepherd says she spent several days practicing the herd. The sheep and goats were lured by pieces of bread, which they quickly gobbled up after being released into the field. Helping the shepherd was an organizer who works with a flock to run team training exercises for companies. He says they wanted to do something to grab people's attention and encourage them to get COVID jabs.
Well, if I were to just write it on Facebook, nobody would notice it. And my job is to have company teams leading some thousand sheep from A to B, and I have noticed how enthusiastically the sheep are received, and that it simply reaches people deep inside, which is perhaps not possible rationally with rational arguments.
Etzold says sheep bring out the soft side of people and hopes that this will help convey the message. So far, the campaign has received a positive response, with videos of the sheep arrangement going viral. Official data shows Germany has the lowest inoculation rate among Western European nations. This is mainly attributed to vaccination hesitancy, as well as a small percentage who vehemently oppose getting the jab. Technological change is accelerating today, with robots and artificial intelligence making fast inroads into human lives. A consumer electronics show in Las Vegas is the latest example of the same. From lifelike baby dolls to full-grown human-like robots are on the display. They not only write, cry, laugh, and blink, but some of them speak and react when you tell them something. The most interesting thing about these robots is their reactions, which are just like humans, seeming as if they are real people. The robot makers say soon people will not be scared of these human-faced machines being among them.
Humans are so complex, so making a robot exactly like a human is almost impossible. If we did that, then you wouldn't be scared of it, because you'd just assume it's a human. But you get that uncanny valley just before, where it doesn't quite move like a human, doesn't quite express itself or emote or talk like a human. And that's the uncanny valley. That's the scary bit. If you go further back to something that looks less like a human, then suddenly you like it a lot more.
The robot makers hope that the way these robots are made would help even doctors how to treat and confront children, for instance. They also hope that by adding more human characteristics to these robots, the machines will be at the service of humans more than before. Let's see what's happening in one of the world's oldest festivals. It's called Black and White Carnival, celebrated every year in the Colombian city of Pasto. But it has a lot more than what its name may suggest. The carnival, full of vibrant colors and fun, livens up when people perform music too. Those in attendance even threw talcum powder and foam to add more doses of joy. More things to visit too. Colorful monuments and floats are brought to the streets. An artisan explains what's behind one of the huge sculptures exhibited there.
This commemorates what we are going through right now in the world, the virus, that little thing that brought COVID. We have skulls, people who died, those who are reborn, children, old people, and a lady. That's the whole motif. It's called rebirth.
The event has roots in Spanish and African traditions related to the indigenous people